Book of Serenity, Case 21. Union sweeps the ground. Introduction. Having shed illusion and enlightenment, having cut off holy and ordinary, although there are not so many things, setting up host and guest and distinguishing noble and mean is a special house. It's not that there is no giving jobs on assessment of ability, but how do you understand siblings with the same breath, adjoining branches? Case. As Yun Yan was sweeping the ground, Da Wu said, "Too busy." Yun Yan said, "You should know there's one who isn't busy." Da Wu said, "If so, then there's a second moon." Yun Yan held up the broom and said, "Which moon is this?" So, already here, the third week of our practice period. How did this happen? For me now, 61 years old, I look in the mirror and I wonder, how did this happen? This precious dream of life, this precious life, we come together in the place where the bird sings. The bird doesn't seem to care that the sutra service is over. Willing to sing his song, proclaim her dharma, with no thought wasted, just the singing. And each one of us, just like this bird, each one of us sings the song of ourself, and sometimes we say, "Well, I'm not really myself today." Or we say, "Oh, that's just like me. There I go again." And amid all of the coming and going of our minds and bodies, this coming and going sesshin, in the midst of this coming and going of my Dharma brother who took his life, and the next day an email from Dharma friends, brother and sister Dave and Devin, of their new boy, Leo Buchanan, Rutschman Miller. Now he is in his second week of life, living his life, crying out, receiving what is given. Another friend is now with her mother. Her mother, who is now confined to bed and not eating anymore, and she writes, "We are near the end now. this world of coming and going. Another name for the Buddha is the Tathagata, the one who comes and the one who goes. We say just coming, just going. Just sweeping. This lovely koan of these two Dharma brothers here playing with each other, wrestling with each other, dialoguing and certifying with each other. Yun Yan is, we heard of him last night. He is Dongshan's teacher. Yun Yan studied with Bai Zhang. The story goes he studied for 20 years and did not attain awakening. And eventually went on to another master and attained awakening and became a great teacher. And these stories and Zen is, we hear a lot about great masters. And some of them touch our hearts. Because these great masters are not outside of us. They live, Uchiyama Roshi said that everything we encounter is ourself. So usually there's me and there's the bird outside. There's me and there are these Zen masters. There's me and there are others. But sometimes when we come into stillness, when we can let things be, when we can let ourselves be, we can hear the bird almost at the edge of our heart, perhaps. Or maybe some long distance away. This one that you have always been. Little Leo has no notion of being himself. He simply cries out when he's hungry. And each one of us, on the deepest level, has no notion of who we are. We weave these intricate stories and guard them and amend them and protect them as if they were us ourselves. Human beings will kill each other, will do terrible things to each other to defend their story. Each one of us falling in love with our story, terrified to let go. And each one of us longing to let go. Each one of us daring to hope that it might be okay to be who we are. And meanwhile, each one of us perfectly being as we are. beyond any idea we have of ourself. So in this story, Yunyan sweeping, as I was thinking about this story, I was thinking first of all of the monk who is still sweeping in the clearing in the woods, in the mountains, from Diane's story. And from this distance, I can't tell whether there's one monk there or two. Keeps shape-shifting, but the sweep, sweep. Chirp, chirp. But in traditional monasteries, Melissa reported as part of her Soto priest training, they were trained how to clean floors where you get down on all fours and put a towel or rag in front of you and run up and down the hallway with your hands pushing the towel. Perhaps Yunyan was sweeping like this. Many kinds of mindfulness and many ways of being present. One of the things we value in Zen is a directness and a fully engaging body and mind. It can be so lovely to slow down our slow walking, to do things slow motion can open up things for us and we can find our way in. But also to move vigorously, to run, to do the dishes, to be fully present. And so there is a way of cleaning, not slow motion, but fully and vigorously sweeping. And so maybe Yunyan is working hard sweeping. And his Dharma brother comes along to offer a little helpful observation. I'm reminded of how it is for me sometimes when I get a little helpful observation. Thank you very much. How the self arises. How dare you say that about me? This very arising is the activity of the Dharma. Again and again and again we say that what we are cultivating here is not simply some kind of even-keeledness, but what we are cultivating is the vividness of human life, the 10,000 joys and sorrows, and so that when the sun shines, we can see clearly, and when the fog rolls in, when the great sadness comes, we cry. All of this is the activity. So when reactiveness comes, there is some amazing energy of this reactiveness. I'm reminded maybe 10 years ago now, I was doing sculling for several years and quite enjoying the lovely, it's quite a lovely sport because involves so much balance and finesse and also so much full body engagement, the stroke and the glide and the stroke and the glide. And I was working with a coach and he had videotaped us for the first time. And as we were walking from the water to the boathouse to look at the video, I said, gee, I'm really a little nervous about seeing myself and you know, what you'll say. And he said, oh, don't worry, I'm not here to judge you, only to criticize you. And so I thought, oh, okay. Oh, that. I get so afraid. We get so afraid. But anyway, Da Wu, the troublemaker, comes along. Says, well, too hard, too much, too busy. Yun Yan responds, and I imagine immediately responding to his dear friend. Maybe they had been on many pilgrimages together. Da Wu apparently was with him at Baijiang's monastery. Dharma brothers and Dharma sisters are so precious, and all of us here in this room, Dharma brothers and sisters, in the midst of our coming and going. For some of us now, many years, many memories, Senexit House and Allison's Orchard, sitting here, sitting there. And for some of us, just a few months, just a few weeks, just today. In the Dharma, in this great wondrous Dharma, this great project of awakening, this project of being ourself, doesn't matter. I still have fond memories of Dharma brothers and sisters from 30 years ago. Still sit with me. And so we sit with each other. We are with each other. We are parts of each other. And so Yun Yan and Da Wu here. And he says, you should know there is someone who is not busy. Pointing to something beneath the coming and going. To this capacity we have to be present, presence now, I think, at the heart of this wonderful secular movement of mindfulness. People beginning to talk and wonder at this capacity we have as human beings to be alive to ourselves, to feel what we feel. And the great transformative power of this awareness. The restorative power to simply be where we are. In Zen, we talk about host and guest, mentioned in the introduction here. The host and guest, Dogen says, Ji Ju Yu Zamai, self-receiving and self-employing samadhi. So we both receive. Big self meets little self. Big self, this field of awareness that we can learn to appreciate, learn to allow ourselves to receive the teachings of the insentient beings, to receive the sensation of the moment. And this into this field of awareness, into the silence, then something appears. The song of the bird, the activity of the moment. And the teaching is that in this meeting, the whole universe is born. Our life appears. This is the world and the self creating each other with nothing fixed and permanent. All of this arising and falling away in perfect harmony. All of us somehow accomplished the arising. We find ourselves in this moment. And all of us are also fading away. All of us have to do this, we say, shigyo practice, this dying practice. We have to make our bows. Coming and going. So Yunyan points to this one, the one who is present, who knows. One teacher says, asked the question, does the one who know you are sick, is she sick? Is the one who feels the pain, is he in pain? There is this indescribable something. It's quite wonderful whenever we try to define this, and this lovely mindfulness movement now, quite a thing, quite a wonderful thing in this world. I'm sort of on the edge of it myself. But I love hearing people try to explain what mindfulness is. 1,000 definitions. And no one knows. It simply arises. But we can know it for ourselves. We can be present in this moment. We can sense the breath. We can know the difference between being caught up in our story and being in the aliveness, the vividness of the moment. So Yunyan presents this. There is one who is not busy. Quite a comfort to remember in the middle of so much to do, in the middle of our lives, in the middle of getting it right and not getting it right. Something else is vividly apparent. And then Dawu comes back and says, are you making this and that? Aren't you falling into this world of separation? So you say there's a host and guest. You say there's two. A wonderful challenge, a wonderful turning, because at every point the mind wants to solidify. Some insight arises and we make a new category. Our stories drop away. For a moment we see the fabric on the wall in front. We see the fence. We hear the bird. We touch the great sadness, the great despair. And what we are learning is to let it be. And of course it wants to form as a view, wants to fixate. So Dawu's challenge, so are there two of you there? And Yunyan's wonderful response, and I think in so many of these Zen stories, we're tempted to explain. I myself, in listening to the koan, I endlessly fall into the trap of thinking there's something else. You know, I hear Melissa reads the koan last night, and I just feel my mind going, and oh my God, there's something I don't know. What are they talking about? And I imagine there is something other than just this moment. All the koans are traps laid for us, some bait dangled on a hook, and we want to explain, we want to figure out. But this explanation and this figuring out will never do. It will never do for our life. But there is some way of knowing, of embodying, of being present beyond Zen. If we are attached to the teachings of Zen, we are in great trouble. We have to let everything go and abide with what is arising. And so Yunyan doesn't fall into the trap of explaining how, well, no, it's really not dualistic because you see the way I'm talking about it. He doesn't go there. But he raises the broom. He presents the matter itself. He shows up. And this is our work, to show up in the middle of coming and going. Showing up always fully. We never show up partially. Showing up fully in our hiding. Showing up fully in our confusion. All of it is already here. All of it functioning. Functioning effortlessly. So to have faith. Faith enough, not faith in something, but faith enough to see what will happen if I do nothing. What will happen if I simply allow myself to feel what I feel? Allow thoughts to come and go. As Yunyan was sweeping the ground, Da Wu said, "Too busy." Yunyan said, "You should know there's one who isn't busy." Da Wu said, "If so, then there's a second moon." Yunyan held up the broom and said, "Which moon is this?" Thank you. So please sit comfortably. and hold up your broom.
I should thank the bird in a way, because what struck me is, as you mentioned the bird, and what struck me as you were speaking is that the bird sings, and we don't really hear it. What we hear is, you know, the bird proclaims the Dharma. And it proclaims it to the air around it. You know, the bird is sentient, the air is not. And yet, the air then proclaims the Dharma. And it strikes the window, and the window proclaims the Dharma. And it strikes us. Mm. And you sit there, and we don't even have to speak. We can just make eye contact. And it's still, you know, it's the photons that are... They're transmitting the Dharma just as much as the mind-to-mind connection. It's all of this is there as this huge... This huge... I don't know what. It's all singing. It's all... You know, it's hearing you speak. It's you know, the bird is not singing at the moment, and yet the vibrations, the air is still ringing with its song. Is in a way, in the same way that the bell, when you strike the bell and it proclaims the Dharma, right. It continues to do it over and over. Who knows? Forever, the bird is singing forever. You know, I.
They don't call it the wondrous Dharma for nothing.
But Ed, really appreciating, I mean, hear your appreciation for this one fabric. Right? There's just one thing going on. And I would also say, be careful here, because I can already feel the separating in trying to describe it. And you know, that's what happens to us.
And that is the Dharma as well.
Sure.
And, yes.
Be careful.
Okay.
But I think when we see this, we catch a glimpse that everything is vibrating with everything else. You know, it's so apparent when we see it, and none of our words can describe it, because the words are of it, but... It's not what we think. So, thank you for sharing the vibration with us.
Thanks for seeing how you still think that there's something else going on in these koans. Because, you know, it's easy to think that, you know, at some point, you know, I will always see things clearly.
Yeah. I like to say the good news and the bad news is that that's not true. Okay. You know, but that... that sense arises, you know, oh, someday I'll be different.
When it hooks into the judge, I love your story about the sculling.
Oh, right.
I'm not here to judge you.
Just to criticize.
That seems a Zen master.
He was wonderful, yeah.
But the judge that just already thinks we're so stupid, and Collins can fan the flames there. In a certain way, and you know, if it's clearly revealed, the desire to be clear all the time, forever, that's useful. And to, you know, to face into that, I just want to be this kind of person who always gets it and never does this and always does that. And that's the That's the judge coming in and saying, not now. It's not enough to be totally confused. So the total confusion is the sound of the bird in that moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And reminds me of Prisca, what you were saying last night about how do we work with teachers? And that if we think the teacher has our answer, we're in trouble. And the same way with koans, that I tend to think, oh, they're talking about something I don't know about. And so I have to, rather than they're talking about my life, and then I can find my way in. So that, again, it's not out there.
You know, and it's one of the things we point to when we study koans and Dogen and Hongzhir and any of our texts, to not head into what we don't know, but recognize what we already know, because we hear something and it suggests something to us that we can trust, you know. And usually, after beating our heads against the wall trying to figure out a koan, it usually goes back to the very first impulse we had when we heard it. It's so simple. It's just tweet, 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 tweet. And we tried to make this elaborate proof of our goodness or our intellect or something. Mm-hmm. We have to do that, I guess, to see it. You know, they sometimes say you sweep up dust in the eyes and that clears the eyes. So the dust is the confusion and the trying to figure it out. Thinking we don't know, yeah. And if that goes away, I know so many people who try to defend their clarity, and that's a real sad place to be. That's a real stuck place.
And on that note about defending clarity, so I loved the response, you know. I'll give you 2 moons.
Yeah.
Yeah. it reminded me of this when I was a beginning Zen student, and I went to hear a Dharma talk by someone who I knew just a little bit. And so there were 2 talks. The first talk I went to, and afterwards, I was walking to my car, and I said, "You know, your talk made me really sad." and I didn't. I actually didn't mind being sad. You know, I didn't realize that I was being insulting. And so, and so then I went to the next Dharma talk, and that the same person was giving another talk. And I really feel that he was responding to my having been sad over the first talk. And so he decided to read some of his poetry. And his poetry is very vivid imagery, you know, and maybe kind of edgy and everything. And it was at a monastery, and there's a whole bunch of monks there. It was like real serious, you know, they had their own sesshin kind of thing going on. And in the middle of the poem, one of the monks says, "Words, words, words." And so then, the speaker, you know, "I'll give you 2 moons. You know? And it was very vibrant, you know, and it just, this, you know, the way we can get tangled up in thinking, you know, that in separating, you know, that there's poetry and then there's, you know, Zen, or there's, you know, this and that, and just getting defensive about, well, you know, If you really are practicing, you don't, you know, recite sexual poetry, which it was pretty sexual, you know, so they were all, they were really unnerved by it. So, whatever, you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, this thing about defending clarity is, so there's the near enemy of stating our truth, you know, so, you know, here's your 2 moons. But I think sometimes it's so important for us to really come forward that way. And we don't even have to be right. Right? In fact, if we wait to make sure we're right, it's already gone by. But I think a lot of us can get self-depreciatory. Well, I don't really know. Mm. I guess you must. You know, and sometimes to hold up the broom, to say, here's how it is. And then it gets vivid, as you say. Right? And then so important, because then right or wrong, we learn something. We come forward and we're met. And there's something more important than being right or wrong. There's something much more important that we can stand up for. And we will be taught.
Depending on our own clarity and speaking up when we feel that we are really clear, it is kind of what you're talking about. I feel that if I think that I know something and I feel that's true for me, it's easy for me to say, no, that's not, just like to dismiss it. But to speak up for it, it's like it's also okay for me that it's not true. There's when I defend clarity and I'm not okay with when it's not true, that's kind of really sticky. But yeah, I just, when you were talking about that, that came up to my mind, that if it's not, how okay am I with that if it's not true?
Well, and it's a different, I can speak my truth, or you can speak your truth, and it doesn't have, everyone doesn't have to agree.
Yeah.
That's what I'm hearing you saying. So there's one truth, and you must see this too, but there's another truth, that this is my truth. And someone can say, well, it's not my truth.
Yeah.
And you can say, great, what is your truth?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. But I think you're really catching some subtle difference in coming forward. And I don't think Yun Yan was coming forward in the me as opposed to you. Mm-hmm. But he was sort of, this was his truth. And Dao Wu could have said, in one version, he shakes his sleeves and walks off. And fine.
Yeah.
No problem. Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
I liked, you mentioned that how difficult it is to define mindfulness. When I took the mindfulness-based stress reduction class afterwards, some of my coworkers were really interested in it, so I gave a presentation to my group about it. And the very first thing is, what is mindfulness? Because it's a word that you end up using a lot when you talk about it. And I, in the presentation itself, I literally went through the process that I took to try to define mindfulness. So the first thing is I had a quote from Wikipedia, and I had a quote from a Theravada text, and I had a quote from Mindfulness in Plain English. But when it all came down to it, it was hard to define, but easy to experience. And that is something that I think is really interesting, is that it is so difficult to nail down, and yet, everyone, whether they've meditated or not, has had a moment of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That hard to define, easy to experience, is that what you just said?
Yeah.
That goes for the Dharma, too. It's this whole thing. When I worked at the Center for Mindfulness, we used to joke that mindfulness was the M word, the F word. and even sometimes our teaching would be criticized. You're using the word mindfulness too much when you teach. And just try to point to it. It was a very similar instruction. At mindfulness conferences, people argue about what mindfulness is. It's really cool to, now that I'm not in the middle of it, it's really cool. At the time, I was like, what? So the Theravadins argue with the Tibetans, who argue with the Zen people, who argue with the scientists, who argue with their researchers, who argue with the teachers. It's really great. And it's a little bit going back to Prisco saying that, and it's okay to come forward in this clarity, but also to be open to everybody else has their own way. That's really important.
And I think this Harville Hendricks, you remind me of the, couples therapist, and he talks about speaking the microscopic truth. And that's the truth that you can say that cannot be contradicted. So if I say, well, you're slightly off base there, that could be argued, well, no, I'm not. But if I say, I'm confused, then somebody could say, well, no, you're not, but it's kind of meaningless. But there is a way we can come forward that's not relative, and it's not about creating stories about other people, but it is about presenting. Here's how it is for me. I am brokenhearted and unsure what to do. You know, and I think when we as human beings come forward in whatever state we are like that, it's a gift. You know, we all long to be able to do that. And we're all sort of waiting, like, well, I'll do it if you'll do it. Or I'll do it if you'll tell me that you'll approve of me in advance, then maybe I'll really. But it can't be contingent like that. And that's the great thing. There is some freedom. Each one of us has the choice at any moment. What if I just come forward? And some people will say, oh, that's so wonderful. And other people say, well, can't you manage your feelings? You poor thing. You know? But we are free. Yeah, Julie.
The talk about being clear on things reminds me of one of those kind of the moments I had reading a book. I think the book was called something about on being wrong or something along that line. But it points out that the feeling of clarity, the feeling of certainty, you know, it feels like such a big thing when we find it. It's a feeling. I mean, just like that in your foot, or being sad today, or happy today, or whatever. And it's going to come and go like every other feeling. It really is, you know, just another feeling.
Yeah. That's Leonard Cohen's line I love. Don't trust your inner feelings. Inner feelings come and go. He's a Zen practitioner. He knows this thing that you know.
That feeling of being clear and certain.
And the feeling of being confused. Yeah. It's also a feeling. comes and goes. And I think you were pointing out, Dave, how we cling to these things as a self-identity in your talk. You know, and that's where it gets really painful. I am a confused person. I am a clear person. I know more than you do. I know less than you do.
Right. Yeah. And then either one we then have to make come true.
Yeah.
And do crazy things to make sure all the data we take in confirms that I am an idiot or that I am slightly better than you or, you know, whatever. Well, let's hold up our broom silently. Oh, actually, let me just check with the teacher of the day. What should we do now?
We decided we're going to have bright lights behind our heads to indicate who's the teacher of the day.